Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
Greg Bauer, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to see you, Stu.
Well, and it's nice to have you here to share a few stories, because what we want to talk about today is the art of storytelling and why it's so important in our lives. I know that you work in the corporate sector. You help a whole bunch of companies tell their story, but it's something that all of us need to learn how to do if we want to share experiences and draw people into the experience of our lives. What is it that made you decide to explore this as a theme that's so important to you and to your clients?
Well, experience. I learned through many different engagements with clients and different issues that we work through that information is not communication. Rational connections don't really stimulate an audience and engage an audience in the message that you want them to receive or the story that you feel is important to their lives, and that ultimately storytelling is the path to connect with other audiences. And when you think about it, storytelling is an important part of our evolutionary DNA. It's how we've always organized the world and how we need to organize the world to participate in it.
Yeah. You know, you talked about the fact that it's not necessarily just logic. And yet if we go back to the Greeks, I think it was Socrates who said, you know, if you can get emotion out of the way and just deal with the facts, then everybody's going to get the story. But I think what we've learned is that's not the case at all.
No, I think Socrates had that wrong, because facts and logic don't stimulate the brain. Facts and logic don't really communicate simply and effectively about how a person sees their environment that they live in. It's stories. Stories are shared narratives. Stories are the way we organize our experiences, the way we organize the environment around us. And if you're going to connect with an audience, you need to know the stories that motivate them and how they see the world. So with so many examples of big organizations trying to explain their way rationally out of a problem, when it's really about connecting with people with the right character and the right values, and that comes back to storytelling.
Okay, but how do you do that? That is, you know, much easier said than done. And for all of us, if we want to tell our own story, we become, in many ways, our own largest impediment, because we suffer from the curse of knowledge. I know too much about me. I don't know how to draw you into me or into my story. So where do you start in trying to be able to build a story that others can connect to?
That is so interesting, because storytelling really starts with listening. When you look at how you need to connect with an audience and bring something new into their lives, the first thing you must do is empathize with that audience. Empathize with where they come from. Where did they grow up? Well, culturally, economically, socially, where do they come from? What are the important influences in their lives? How do they see the world? And when you can see the world through their eyes, you have an opportunity to enter that world and talk to them. So listening and empathizing, I think, is the foundation to storytelling.
And so when you say enter their world, when it comes to telling a story, does it become essential then that I start in your world as the listener and bring you to my world, or do I immediately try and grab you and pull you into my world?
I think you need to start in the world of the audience. You have to know yourself first. So you start with the core of what it is you want to communicate. But there's a saying in persuading an audience that if you want to change somebody's mind, start with your weakest argument. Because if you start with your strongest, they're not going to listen to you, and they're probably going to double down on what they already believe. So starting with your weakest argument says, how do I find a connection point between what I feel is valuable that I have to speak about and what that audience needs to understand from me and how they see the world? And so your goal is to find some shared point of contact where you can then talk to them.
As you're saying this, I know this to be true, but one of the biggest points is that you don't just launch into telling a story without giving it prior thought. Preparation is a big part of it.
Yes, and the first, I think, building block of a story is who's the storyteller. It has to be anchored in someone authentic and real. Not somebody who has a big title or a senior in an organization, but the person who actually is closest to the thing you want to talk about. So you want to talk about technology, find a technologist. You want to talk about a brand, find someone who lives and breathes that brand. And when you anchor your story in someone authentic, you have a better chance of connecting. We look at the President's Choice brand that Loblaws launched many years ago was Dave Nichol, and it was Dave Nichol's experience of exploring the world, finding new recipes, and bringing them back to a Canadian audience and tailoring them for their palate and sharing his excitement. Mm-hmm. And so as a storyteller, he was incredibly authentic because he understood Canadians, he understood food, and he was the original foodie and excited about it. You can look at other instances where a celebrity has been bolted onto the side of a brand and it doesn't work because they're not real. So the first thing is the messenger.
Right. But we can also look at those experts, enthusiasts, or geeks or whatnot who are so mired in the detail of something that they forget or they lose sight of what the story is. And so how do you then start to find that balance? Yes, you know absolutely everything about computer code, but how do you make that computer code fascinating to me, your audience? Because I'm sure it is, just so long as you can unlock that in a way that makes me go, wow, I had no idea that the world was so incredibly fascinating.
Well, there's a really interesting video that I once watched where Bill Gates and Steve Jobs are being interviewed about a project that they worked on early on where Apple had a terrible version of BASIC and Microsoft had a great version and Apple wanted to partner with them to bring that version over. And so the host is interviewing Bill Gates, and Bill Gates is giving a technical, detailed explanation of how the BASIC was built. And in the middle of the interview, Steve Jobs interrupts him and says, no, let me tell this story. And he says, here was my frustration. I knew that, you know, we had this great BASIC, but it wasn't working for us. And Steve Wozniak was not getting, you know, the message that I needed it to change. And he turned it into this personal drama of trying to persuade Steve to do what he did, and the need to bring Bill in to help. And it became a drama. It became a really interesting story. And you understood what happened.
Because it involved people.
Yes, it involved people. It involved conflict. It was a human drama. And so if you're the technologist and you want to reach another audience, you've got to get outside of your bubble and understand how that audience cares about what you're going to talk about. How does it impact their lives?
So it's interesting that you mentioned Steve Jobs, because I think of him as being one of the great storytellers of the last quarter century. He changed the way in which we viewed our ability, well, to change the world. And he wanted us to do it through his products. But he created that sense of the possible.
And he understood how to use drama to launch a product. So if you go back and you look at when the iPhone was launched, he comes out on stage and he very simply lays down the drama as smartphones are not so smart. And then positions the keyboard on the smartphones, whether it was Motorola or some other brand, as the enemy because it took away screen space. And screen space was your freedom. Screen space was your ability to explore outside of the phone. And he turned it into a drama of, I'm going to grab you with this notion that your smartphone, not smart. Let me tell you why. Let me tell you who the villain is. And now let me show you the hero. And the hero was the iPhone.
Right. So if we continue along on how do we tell a great story, part of it is that he knew what his end point was and what he wanted you to do with that information. How important is that it, as a storyteller, that you say, I have a point to this, and in that, I want to move you to action?
I think it's a very interesting world right now in that you're less driving a message at somebody and trying to get an outcome from that message. Yes, you do that. But the most important thing, I think, right now is to engage in a dialogue with an audience, and that's give and take. That's putting out a point of view, a value, if you're a brand, what is your purpose, and connecting that to the lives of the audience. And so one of my favorite examples is, and it's a quote from Pete Townsend from The Who. Now, how did The Who become The Who? And there's a really great documentary called Lambert and Stamp, but ultimately,
what, on how The Who became The Who?
On how The Who became The Who, their original first two managers.
Yeah.
But in the documentary, there's this quote from Pete Townsend where he says, you know, I've been a rock star for 50 years, and the reason I've been successful is because I don't market to an audience, I market the audience. So my songs are about the experience that my audience has. My identity is about what is appealing to my audience. I stay close to my audience. And so as a brand or as an organization, I think one of the most important things you can do is understand that audience, stay close to it, and listen to what they're telling you, not just push messages at them.
you know, as you're telling me that, I'm thinking it gets harder and harder to do that the more successful you are, because you get wrapped up in the work that you're doing and you get separated from those very people who are your audience. But I think you're absolutely right that if you don't stay connected to them, well, you do like Hillary Clinton did, and you don't go to Michigan.
Exactly. You don't go to Wisconsin. You don't understand at heart that you've got to connect with the people you need to persuade to vote for you, and they need to understand what your story is and how your story is like their story to become our story. So if you look at Hillary Clinton, for example, and go back to 8 years ago when she was running against Barack Obama, there was that moment in Iowa when Obama showed strongly, surprised the Clinton campaign, and then destroyed the campaign by saying simply, I'm not here because it's my personal ambition or because I feel entitled to this job. I'm here because I want to bring change. And that suddenly framed the narrative around Hillary Clinton as a little entitled. And I don't think she learned anything in 8 years after that.
You saw that was the message that was used against her in this last election. I was reading a fascinating article about how there was only one moment where she actually started to reveal part of herself, and it was when she came out of Iowa going into New Hampshire, and she went from this presumptive nominee that everybody went, well, you're going to be it, and then along comes Bernie Sanders, who's Mr. Authenticity, you know what I'm going to do. So now all of a sudden she's like off balance. She revealed part of herself, and that's what people connect to, isn't it? Like, I get to see you for who you are.
Yes, and I think politics is probably the rawest coliseum for a human being to participate and compete in, because who you are really comes through. And if you're Hillary Clinton and you're obsessed with secrecy and you don't trust that you're going to be treated fairly, because I think that drives some of that, you hold yourself within a bubble and it doesn't connect with an audience. And an audience doesn't understand you as a human being. And as someone who is part of them. And you saw her competitor did that brilliantly. And it was enough to overcome a lot of deficits to become president. I mean, I was really surprised. I was not surprised that Hillary Clinton didn't campaign well. I've been doing storytelling workshops for 6 years, and I start off with Obama and Hillary. And I've told everyone along the way that don't think that this person is a shoe-in to either be the Democratic nominee or the president. And even I, on the night of the election, I was stunned. I thought she would win I couldn't believe you could alienate so many audiences and still prevail. But he connected.
So going back to the elements of storytelling and looking a little bit at Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, there were sort of post-election interviews with people who had voted for Trump who said, well, I voted for him because I could understand him. She was just blah, blah, blah. The writer said he came to realize the blah, blah, blah was that Hillary was incomprehensible to them because her language was beyond their ability to comprehend.
Yes.
And so this goes back to, I need to identify my audience and speak to them.
Well, that's an interesting point on a number of levels. So start with the language. You look at Trump's language, it's very simple. It's very hard to find a two-syllable word. You're seldom going to find a three-syllable word. And my experience as a communicator is stay with the simple words.
But do we have to do that ourselves?
Yes. Yes. I think the minute you start to use language as furniture, you get into trouble. When you start to decorate a sentence, when you make it longer than it needs to be, and I look at key messages that are developed, and you know, I'll see some things come through that are three lines long. You know, as a journalist, no one is ever going to say that in an interview. They won't remember it. It won't connect. The audience won't understand it and remember it. But if I can take a complex issue and make it simple, which is really what my audience wants, it'll resonate and it will stick. And you saw that in the election. And you also saw it, not just the language, but the visual language. So I'm certainly not a Trump supporter and I don't support the campaign at all, but I knew a month before the election that he was going to build a wall, he was going to tear up trade agreements, he was going to protect the borders, he was going to do 3, 4, 10 different things, and I could remember all of them. If I was voting and I was thinking of what Hillary Clinton was going to do, it was going to maintain the status quo.
Right.
And I'm not happy with the status quo. In an election, you've got to persuade the people who are going to vote and shift the vote, right? Mm-hmm. So there's an old saying from Jacques Parizeau when he was leading the Parti Québécois that 40% of Quebecers had thought about the issue of independence, were committed to it, studied it, were going to vote in favor. 40 were going to vote against it because they were committed Federalists. You were competing for the 20% in between, and you only right. needed to win 10. And that's why the election became about emotions and became about all kinds of myths and rhetoric that had nothing to do with the merits of one option or the other. And you saw that in the U.S. election as well.
You talk about keeping it simple. I remember R.H. Thompson doing an analysis of the Bush-John Kerry debate. And he was asked who won the debate. And he said, well, George Bush won, even though he qualified himself as not being a fan of George Bush. And the reason he said it that Bush won is he could hear himself finish a sentence. And he looked the audience in the eye. So that was a bit mm-hmm. of performance. But really, it's that going back to what you were talking about, keeping it simple.
Yes, and it's getting outside your bubble. Like I think one of the big challenges for media right now is post-election, you had 200 newspapers endorse Hillary Clinton. You had 6 endorse the president-elect.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to look at that lack of influence over the ultimate outcome and not believe that media are disconnected in some way from their audience. And there's a number of reasons for that, right? There's the decline of big media, the lack of consolidation, the rise of social media and lots of other voices, and that erodes the authority of those news outlets. But there's also a sense that they didn't really cover that public that was going to decide this election and really didn't understand them. And so one of the things I think is really tricky right now is to avoid, as an organization or as a media company or as an individual, living inside a bubble, because confirmation bias and the way that everything is set up on your social networks to bring to you the things you expect to find tends to make that bubble smaller and smaller and you less effective in reaching a bigger audience.
I got a story to tell. One of the 3 or 4 most important things that I need to keep in mind as I build that story so that it can at least find some willing eyes and ears.
Yes, and when you look at how you persuade people, it's understanding them and empathy, as I was saying earlier. It's knowing what they care about, because ultimately the way a person sees the world is, there's a lot of myth based in that. You know, as an individual, you are your best sense of yourself. You hope you aspire to be that person, and as a society, even more complicated, mm-hmm. you aspire to live up to a myth of what you believe you are as a collective. And so you're already starting with a very emotional-based set of truths that are not factual, mm-hmm. not necessarily true at all. But they glue the society together and they hold the society together, and it's the way you communicate and influence that society, and you need to be mindful of it.
What are your 4 or 5 things that I need to do to be able to develop a story? Because you run programs on how to do this. What are those key elements that you drive home? I'm sure over a couple of day process, but we only have a minute or two.
There's really 4 elements yeah. to building a story. The first is, who's your storyteller, right? Have a solid foundation in someone who is authentic. The second is, how do you grab an audience? So, you know, if you go back to Michael Lewis and the book Flash Boys, on 60 Minutes, the markets are rigged. Well, I pay attention to that. You tell me the financial markets are rigged, you've got my attention.
Mm-hmm.
You're Steve Jobs and you say smartphones are not smart, I'm going to listen.
Yeah.
Then you've got to create a human drama. You've got to talk about an actor almost in a play and how they experience the story. And that's the heart of it. How do you make that human drama come alive? Sight, sound, taste, smell, activate someone's brain and all of its elements so that they receive the information. Logic doesn't do that,
mm-hmm.
but stories do. And then, since you've started with really a conflict at the heart of every story, you've got to resolve that conflict. So what ultimately happened, and what is the resolution to this conflict that you created when you grab my attention,
mm-hmm.
you've got to deliver that at the end of a story.
So who are the great storytellers of our time right now?
Well, Steve Jobs
yeah.
made a huge impact. Very, very impressed with Howard Schultz. I think he's developed a very, very strong position for his brand.
So I'm in complete agreement with you. We're singing off the same song sheet, but there's a lot of people who still don't get this. It's not what we're taught in school. It's not how you write your essay. It's not all these kinds of things. What are the biggest impediments in getting us, you know, more of us, to become storytellers?
I think that there's, you look at organizations, and at the top of organizations are largely rational people, or at least people who have followed a rational path to get there. And throughout your career, that has been, you know, all your arguments, all of your milestones have been successes because you won a rational argument. And then you get to the top of an organization, you have to communicate with the broader public. The broader public is not rational. The broader public is irrational. It's emotionally driven. It's driven by myths and stories. And suddenly you're in this bubble where you don't understand them. And you see great organizations sometimes stumble when they make a mistake because they think there's a rational explanation to an audience that really wants a simple emotional apology.
Right. They want, you know, a scientific apology. Formula, yes. And storytelling is an art.
And they think information is communication. They think that if you assemble the facts and you put it in a press release or you put it in a speech and you just share that you're going to be successful. And the fact is, even if you're dealing with media and you're hoping the media are going to create a story, you're so much better off if you develop the story yourself and you share it with the media and let them build on it, mm-hmm. or accept it. But that story is what's going to connect with your audience. I also think that a comfort level with the fact that you can make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
There was maybe 20, 30 years ago when you looked at, you know, senior executives in an organization or politicians that a misstep would end your career. And I think the Clinton scandal with Monica Lewinsky, where everybody thought for sure he's going to resign, all the anchors were in Cuba for the Pope's visit, they came back for the resignation, didn't happen. People were kind of comfortable with, you know, he's not perfect. Be fine.
So one of the elements of being a great storyteller is that you expose some of your own vulnerabilities.
Yes.
It's a topic that I find fascinating. Unfortunately, we're out of time, so thank you for coming
thank
in
you,
and
Stu.
Doing this.
Great conversation.
I'd love to tell stories all day long.